Welcome to the Penny and Pops podcast. He's Spencer Penny Strode. I'm Adam Pops Papa Giorgio. It was a very fun ride, but the ride ended Sunday as we lost Game 7 in Cleveland. Yeah, we were up 18 in the second period, and it went bad from there, but our young core got some massive experience moving forward. This 35th Magic season, all time, is going to rank highly for me. Could easily argue this is a top 5 season in Magic history, based off of kind of just where expectations were to begin with and how we ended up here. You know, 47-win team, fifth seed, almost won our first playoff series since 2010. Like, it all came down to home court advantage, really, in the end. And, yeah, I mean, it's all without winning a playoff series, how great this 35th Magic season's been. Cleveland wanted us. They purposely tanked to get the Magic as their playoff matchup. And boy, did they get a whole lot of us. They ended up barely surviving a 7-game series through hell. Let's go.
Hardaway, straight down the lane, the power jam. Point guard on a 7-6 guy. Here's Lewis turning and he shoots. Yes! With 4:12 seconds.
Here's Turkaloo for the win.
We are recording this Monday, April 6th. We'll call it early evening. We lost Game 7 yesterday, 106-94. It sucks, but our long-term future outlook looks good moving forward at the moment. You know, it's in the hands of Jeff Weltman and Anthony Parker now. But, you know, the Magic going into Sunday, you know, they had won three games in this postseason, which was the most wins for us in a playoff since 2010. You know, the last time we won a playoff series was 2010. So the hope, you know, on Sunday was that we were going to finally break that drought. The Magic had only played in 3 Game 7s in franchise history. 1995 Eastern Conference Finals, we slaughtered the Pacers at home. 2003, round one, we blew that 3-1 lead to the Pistons and lost in Detroit. 2009, second round, we won in Boston. The Hito pizza glue game. And then we had Sunday's loss, Penny. So we're 2-2 all time. TNT's Ernie Johnson had a neato stat going into this. In the last 9 Game 7s in the league, the road team was actually 6-3. So now that's 6-4 over the last 10. But that was a pretty encouraging stat, considering it's like, I think it's over 80% of the time the home team wins game seven, I believe. I can't remember now specifically the percentage, but you know, the last Cavs game 7 was when they had LeBron. It was in 2018 when Cleveland won the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that was against a young Boston team, if I remember right. And then Donovan Mitchell, who lives for game 7s, you know, you knew Mitchell was going to have a good game. He just lived for this type of situation. Now, could he muster anything close to his 50-point performance? Who knew? Yeah. You know, he scored those final 22 Cavs points in Game 6, including all 18 in the fourth quarter. But, you know, there's only, what, 36 hours of rest or a little bit longer, whatever? It was less than 2 days of rest, essentially. And, you know, he had that 50-point outing. He was hobbling around. Even actually went back to the locker room during the game, which I didn't realize that while we were at game 6, but he did briefly. And, you know, from the Magic perspective, this was the 12th time the Magic have faced the Cavs. You know, we faced them once in the preseason, 4 times in the regular season, and obviously these 7 playoff games in this 2023-2024 campaign. So, and this is obviously the 4th time in the 7-game series that we were up in Cleveland. So from like a game plan, crowd atmosphere perspective, like there weren't really any more surprises. It's just all about like which team executed better. Penny, how are you feeling going into this game 7? Because I thought we could definitely pull this off. Now, I wasn't going to make any guarantees or any of that, but I was encouraged considering how close we were in game 5. How we gutted it out in game 6 and how kind of the opening was there to take game 7 in Cleveland.
Yeah, I mean, going into the game, I definitely thought we had as good a shot to win it, certainly, as we did to lose it. To your point, the Magic had just proven that they could hang with the Cavs in Cleveland in Game 5, even though we couldn't get it done at the end, and then showed a lot of resiliency in the second half of Game 6 to close it out and force the Game 7. So I think going into the game, I was pretty worried about the start, and felt like if they hung around and didn't get down double digits right off the jump, that they might be in pretty good shape to steal Game 7.
So we got the full ESPN crew on ABC. We had J.J. Redick, Doris Burke, Mike Breen on the call, as we were the only round one Game 7 this time around. And this was the only Sunday NBA game. We were the lead into the 4 p.m. Miami Formula One Grand Prix race. So, on a quick side note, thank God someone not named Max Verstappen finally won a race. That was good to see. Congratulations, Lando Norris. The Magic had not been on ABC in a dozen years. I was at Wall Street Cantina. You, for personal reasons, you had to stay home. But I don't know. Did you watch the pregame? Because I heard the pregame sucked, which was expected when you have like that pregame crew with Stephen A. Smith, etc. Not much Magic stuff to talk about because, well, they don't know how to talk about the Magic.
Yeah, I hate to admit it, or I'm proud to admit it, but I just don't care for the pregame and halftime, especially on that network. So I did not catch in any of the pregame, but it was obviously happy for the telecast to get, the A crew, number one crew, and get to take in that experience at least. And J.J. Redick calling a playoff Magic game. I thought there might be a little more kind of nuanced insight from his experiences that would have been interesting to hear during the telecast too.
Yeah, I thought JJ was just okay. It was kind of weird because like I wanted Doris to talk more and she didn't really get to speak as much as I was hoping for. I'll leave that to the side. We got Mike Breen. That was cool. I know some fans don't like Mike Breen for some reason. I very much do. All right. The refs were John Goble, Bill Kennedy, and Kevin Scott. They played a big role in the second half. I, again, was curious to see, how hobbled was Donovan Mitchell, but also Evan Mobley, because he rolled his ankle and he just could not elevate for the whole second half of Game 6. And that kind of played a factor in us winning that game. And both, honestly, looking back on it now, like both fared pretty well and looked more than healthy by that fourth quarter when they had taken the lead. And definitely neither Mobley or Mitchell was really slowing down. Going into the game, Gary Harris was available with his right hamstring strain and he started. Offensively, Gary didn't play well, but we definitely badly missed his defense, and it definitely helped out for at least the first two quarters at least there. But and then Jared Allen was out again. I think this was his third game that he missed with that rib contusion. And so instead of Marcus Morris starting like he did in Game 6, he went back to the bench. Isaac Okoro started. So it was basically a repeat of the Game 5 lineups. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was a little bit surprised Allen wasn't made available. I still thought that had he played, he actually would have came off the bench, just because Cleveland just does better when Mobley's at center and there's no other big to kind of clog the floor with. But I guess that rib contusion really wasn't a joke, because honestly, when it happened in Game 4, like nobody really noticed that Mo Wagner like kind of barely, on accident kind of got him with like an elbow really. And it didn't seem that bad, but I guess it is. And it'll be interesting to see if he plays in that Celtics series moving forward. But I wasn't surprised that they went back with Okoro starting over Morris, but I don't know. Thoughts on the lineups? Obviously the Magic weren't going to change things with Gary back. I was a little surprised Gary played. I know I said that I thought Gary was going to play, but I wasn't fully certain on that. And I don't think it hurt us that, I think he did fine, like especially defensively, offensively, it just was not a good series for Gary. But thoughts on the lineups, Penny?
Yeah, I would say mostly in the same boat. I was not expecting Gary to be healthy enough to go, and I thought for sure that they were kind of milking the Jared Allen time just to give him, you know, extra rest and recovery for a pivotal, crucial game seven. So I was kind of shocked on both of those in terms of availability, but not surprised to see Morris go back to the bench, especially after the Cavs had kind of, you know, bungled game six and didn't get the same performance out of him that they did in game five.
So it was a solid Magic start to the game for a change. You know, it was just a great start. Paolo just kind of got everybody going. Like at one point he hit like two threes, then Gary got a steal and Wendell hit a three, and we were up 16-10 at that first Cavs timeout. And, you know, we're at 18-10. We were leading when Fultz came in for Gary. At that point, Paolo had scored or assisted on 16 of our first 18 points, which was immense to start. We then went up 20-10 as Suggs fed Wendell Carter Jr. an alley-oop dunk. And, I mean, we're feeling pretty good at that point. You know, the Magic, they were up 24-18 after one quarter. Caris LeVert kind of got it going, and overall, LeVert had a pretty decent game, at least it felt like. And then Fultz, he was getting stuff done, him and Cole, and you know, here and there in that first half. But Fultz in particular, he might have done just enough, especially factoring in kind of his knee issues that is becoming more and more public now. Fultz might have earned himself a second contract. We'll see how that plays out. But and then Ingles and Cole, they started the second period with Mo Wagner, Joe Ingles, and Fultz. So, yeah, I mean, it was an all bench lineup, I believe, briefly there. And then Niang, he came in too. So we did get game seven, George Niang. So Mosley did the thing again, both in the second period as well as early in the fourth quarter, where he sat both Franz and Paolo. And this time it kind of bit us in the ass. Like, we were up 27-18 early in the second quarter. Like, Paolo came in, I think, 80 seconds into the period. So not, you know, not a huge gap in both of them sitting, but, you know, I don't know. What are your thoughts looking back on it, Penny? I mean, it's kind of crazy that he kept, especially with how hot Paolo had started. Like, it's crazy to not stagger guys, right?
Again, for the umpteenth time on all of the podcasts during this series, it's just hard to fathom. And let's not even take into account Franz's ultimate game, because a lot of that, I think, was due to the kind of disruption in the first half. But to not have your 1A and 1B guy, have one of them on the floor at all times, and people are going to point to the, you know, the net differential of the all bench lineup. But I'm calling bullshit on that. And especially now, I will say, you could see the first quarter was great, right? Paolo availed himself incredibly well. In terms of you never know what you're going to get in somebody's first game seven, or frankly anyone in a game seven. Mm-hmm. And he showed up immediately from jump and was incredible. Those guys were exerting themselves. I mean, there were a couple raggedy possessions in the first quarter where you're like dying for either the automatic timeout to come or for one of the coaches to blow it and stop it. There was a lot of energy being exerted there, and I understand that you want to give him a blow, but that doesn't preclude you from staggering your stars.
Yeah. So Cole had this just great sequence where he had just awesome, you know, block from behind. And then on the other end, he got a bucket. And I mean, it was a 9-0 Magic run at that point. We were up 33-18. Franz hit some foul trouble midway through the second. You know, he picked up his third foul, so that didn't help his cause for the day. Mosley definitely was not pleased with Franz's three fouls. I don't think he's going to get a fine because he worded it well enough. But let's just say Mosley wasn't happy about Franz's fouls. And, you know, maybe that factored into his confidence a bit as well. You know, Franz just missed. I felt like every shot Franz missed, it was short. Like he had like that one air ball early on where it went to the side, but then just could not hit a shot. He was just short every time. And I don't think that's fatigue. It's some of that's just confidence. Some of that could be shot form. Some of it, maybe he's carrying an injury that we just don't know. And maybe we'll find out about later on as our off season progresses, but It's not a good Franz game. And hey, I mean, all the big time players go through it. They all go through it. You know, he's 22 years old. He's young. He'll learn. He'll get through it. But I mean, the Magic were still playing well. Magic were up 42-27. As at that point, we were in the bonus. And then Darius Garland picked up his third foul, trying to guard Paolo. And then Max Strus also picked up a third. Both teams were in the bonus with 5:10 to go until halftime. We went up then 47-29 after Gary Harris hit a three. Usually when Gary hits a three, that's a good sign for the Magic game-wise. And at that point, Cleveland just really, really struggling, just big time. Like, Cavs were booing vehemently. They wanted J.B. Bickerstaff's head. They were just very not happy with that team's effort at that point. And they were panicking. And, you know, Bickerstaff at that point got so pissed off that he wasted a challenge, essentially. And the Magic were up 49-31. And that was our biggest lead of the game, was that 18-point lead, 49-31. And then the game turned from there. And this is where I got to blame DJ D-Strong for some Wall Street watch party shenanigans, because he started a second round chant. Like, he literally tried to start a second round chant, and most of the people in Wall Street were wise enough not to partake in that, because we had a long way to go in this fucking game. But I'm going to blame
someone who wasn't there. Kind of a weird chant, just it on is. His head, right? Yeah.
But like, all you had to do was push a Let's Go Magic chant. That's all you got to fucking do, man. Just give me a Let's Go Magic. That's all I need. You know, he jinxes by playing the song before game one. Apparently, he did it again before game five, even though we weren't there. Forget that. So you only play the song when we're actually about to win or going to win or have won. That's when you play the song. You don't do it before tip off. So I am not happy in that regard. So, you know, look, some people will be like, this is ridiculous. You know, shouldn't believe in superstitious jinx crap like that. But I that didn't help in my viewpoint. And at that point, then the Cavs went on a 12-2 run, and the Magic were just trying to survive until halftime. You know, we led 53-43 at halftime. You know, Sam Merrill had brought Cleveland back with some important threes, even though I don't think Merrill played the second half. If he did, I don't think he did anything. But just those few threes that he dropped really just saved Cleveland going into halftime. You know, the Magic were up 18. You're only up 10 at the break. And this is one of those where this was a big moment for Mosley and the staff, and just get that halftime talk in and just regroup, try and refocus on the task at hand and try and start the third quarter well. And I guess it wasn't good enough, because obviously, you know, the third quarter started the way it did. I don't know, Penny, we're up 10 at halftime. How are you feeling? Like, I'm feeling overall good, but obviously, you know, the Cavs chipped the deficit from 18 to 10, but I'm still feeling pretty good if we just get off to an okay start in the third.
Yeah, well, I think to accurately describe the feeling at the time would be good, not great, right? I mean, you're up double digits at halftime, but I want to go back to what you called out as the Gary Harris three was big, the Cleveland using their challenge unsuccessfully in the first half was huge, I thought. And even as a result of that, it was on kind of the little push, ticky-tack, Paolo jump shot. But let's not forget, too, in the first half, Paolo was making every single free throw, too. I mean, you know, double-digit free throw attempts and stepping up to the line and making those. So everything's going well up to that point. And correct me if I'm wrong, obviously Franz got the third foul, but I think Wendell picked up a third foul, too.
I think he did, yeah. You're right.
And that did not help leading into halftime. I think, I don't know if it was one in the first half and one in the second half, but it was time on the floor where Mo Wagner's on the floor and also Tristan Thompson on the floor for the Cavs. And there were two threes, one from Strus and one from Darius Garland. Maybe both were in the third quarter, but he's in that drop coverage in the pick and roll. And you just, you're giving up a wide open three. I just don't understand it when it's Tristan. It's not even somebody who's a threat after screening and rolling like an Evan Mobley. Like, even if the ball goes to Tristan Thompson, what's he going to do with it?
18 right.
feet from the rim. So yeah. I don't know the exact sequence of that, but I'm going to talk about it, you know, as kind of leading into the first half and the Cavs going on that run. It just didn't make sense to me to you know, you don't want anyone to get going, especially Strus or Garland. But I think the numbers are different. It used to be you go, let's get it to single digits before half, you know, or let's get it to 6 points before the fourth quarter. And the numbers are different in the NBA now. So to me, I felt like the number going into halftime was 14. I go, if like 14 or more, I feel really confident. Anything 13 and below, I feel a lot less confident. And obviously we were at 10-point lead at half.
Yeah, look, you mentioned it. Paolo, he was pulling some prime Tracy McGrady shit out there. Like, he had 24 points at the half. Like you mentioned, he was hitting his free throws. And, you know, we'll go over the final box score later, but he deserved all of his free throw attempts and more, to be fair. Donovan Mitchell, he had 15 at the break. I just assumed he would find a way to drop 40. He didn't quite get there. He ended up getting to 38, but you just knew Mitchell was going to have a big second half. And the Cavs were 2 of 11 on threes at halftime. And that's because Sam Merrill went 2 for 2 from deep. And it's just kind of one of those, well, shit, if Merrill doesn't hit both his three-pointers, where are we at that point? So, and the Magic were 7 of 16 on threes. So, like, it wasn't an absurd percentage being 7 of 16. You know, obviously, it's a little bit above what we normally average, but nothing crazy, I thought. And at that point, Banchero had the most points ever in the first half of a game seven by a player 21 years of age or younger. So, guy just keeps making history. All right, so the third starts, and the Cavs just, they start hitting some threes to open the third. And all of a sudden, you go from up 10 to now we're only up 55-51. That's when Garland picked up his fourth foul. We never really made him pay for it. He just stayed out there, and he just didn't get his fifth foul anytime soon there. Cleveland's crowd is very much back into it, obviously only being down four at that point. And look, you knew a Cavs run was coming, but you know, we just never found our composure. We could never stay calm. And even when we did get good looks, like, we couldn't hit them, but we kind of made life difficult on ourselves. You know, Garland and Strus at that point were each had four fouls. Mitchell had three. We should have attacked those guys more. I just feel like we didn't quite do it enough. And then some point, I'd say midway through the third, maybe early in the third, like, the refs are starting to call ticky-tack fouls out of nowhere, where it had not been an issue, had not been a thing earlier in the game or for much of the series, to be fair. And the Magic are only up 64-62 when Wendell had to sit down with 4:25 left in the third with four fouls. Then Suggs got tagged with just a BS shooting foul against Mitchell. And then Mitchell hits the free throws at 64-64. LeVert gave the Cavs their first lead since the first, and it was 66-64, just like that. You know, you go from, 53-43 at halftime to you're down 66-64, like that. And there were some Magic fans already, like, really kind of demoralized. I still thought, like, we could easily go on another run and kind of push out another lead. I saw people on Twitter were freaking out way more than anyone else, which, surprise, surprise, social media folks are freaking out. But, you know, during the stretch, the Magic are just missing a lot of open threes. And, I mean, in some of those, the Cavs are daring a couple of our guys to shoot threes. And, you know, we just weren't hitting them. Strus then just early backbreaker, Max Strus, as he started finding, I guess, his Miami Heat form from last year. You know, he had back-to-back threes to put Cleveland up 74-68. And just out of the blue, Cavs are up by 8, 76-68 entering the fourth quarter. And, you know, we saw a lot of Franz shots falling short. And, you know, with the Cavs up 8 at that point, it was overall a 47-21 Cavs run. And, I mean, it's tough, man. I obviously didn't feel great going into the fourth quarter at that point because, you know, we're not one to make big comebacks. And I mean, at that point, an 8-point deficit is pretty big. I still had faith that we could do it and chip away, but it's just a kick in the balls, man, going through that. And I don't know, what's your feeling at that point going through the fourth?
Well, I to me, the third quarter was not unexpected. And I say that because I feel like the Magic had an opportunity in the first half to really break the Cavs' will. And yeah, they didn't quite get there. And they only pushed it out to 18. You knew a run was coming from Cleveland, and that's one of those things that we've seen it time and again, and throughout the regular season from Jamal Mosley, is He's not quick to use the timeout to break the run. And yeah. I thought, especially in this environment, first two buckets coming out to, you know, cut it, not even before it gets to four, you're like, cut timeout at six, timeout again at I try and stem that tide as much as you can. I would have burned a couple timeouts and tried to keep that snowballing effect from, you know, I mean, that was basically a super quick swing for the Cavs to be down 10 and then, you know, to be up, 66, 64. And the other thing that was just unfortunate is a couple of wide open, you know, penetration, wide open kick out for a wide open corner three that the Magic miss and immediately leads to Cavalier fast break layups like that. You know, if you make that, that's a 5-point swing. And that's kind of demoralizing too, where it just kind of feels like things are getting away from you and you can't slow down the momentum and you can't stop it. Not a great place to be entering the fourth quarter at all. And you mentioned again, Wendell fouling. I know Mo hit a three, but this was probably one of the most egregious and worst played Mo Wagner games that we've seen in quite some time. And that didn't help matters either.
Yeah. The Cavs won the third period, 33-15, just brutal. Like Donovan Mitchell on his own outscored us 17-15, I believe, which would have put him on 32 points going into the fourth. So it was rough stuff. Cole Anthony hit a bank shot to cut the deficit to 81-74 with 8 minutes to go. You know, other than Paolo, it was just tough for us to generate points. And I mean, even Paolo struggling, like Okoro played some pretty good defense, but there's a lot of people just hacking Paolo, and sometimes he'd get to the free throw line, sometimes he wouldn't, but like Paolo's just getting hacked a lot. And
well, there was a lot of praise for the second half defense of Okoro and team. And I really didn't think the defense was any different in the second half. Compared to the first half at all. It was just situational.
Paolo had this huge dunk with 6 minutes left, and you know we were down 77-85 at that point. And you thought if we're gonna swing it, it's gonna be there because Paolo just when he drops a ferocious dunk, it can sometimes spur a run. But then Garland hit a second chance three, and then that was the moment where he and Mitchell just kind of hugged it out, even though Garland hadn't done shit the whole game, like. That's going to look like kind of like a seminal pinnacle moment for the Cavs in that game seven is just that him and Mitchell hugging it out when they're up 11 at that point. Suggs, who was sitting out a good portion of the fourth, was severely hobbling. Like, I don't know if he's going to have a surgery or if he just needs time to heal, but Suggs was hobbling really bad and he fought it out and gutted it out. But clearly that played a role in him shooting terribly. And then again, just these ticky-tack fouls hurt us, whether they were really fouls or not. I some of them, yes, some not. But and at that point, it became like a free throw game for a long stretch of time. Like we're down to 85-94 with 3:23 to go. Cavs get a steal. Garland hit a teardropper. You know, so we were down 11, and at that point, it kind of felt over because we would have had to gone on like a ridiculous 3-point shooting stretch, which that's just not that lineup, what that lineup can do. And we just couldn't hit shots, man. And it's just tough game, great season. Congratulations, John Goble, Bill Kennedy, and Kevin Scott. You got your screen time. Like, it. Obviously, we didn't do ourselves a favor by missing shots, but the officiating changed in that third period, and I think it helped throw us off even more. I don't know. Any final thoughts with how that game ended, Penny? I didn't have any more notes. It was pretty much done.
I mean, you mentioned it, and it's nothing new from throughout the series, but outside of Paolo creating and not even creating, I mean, just making difficult shots, the offense was a struggle. We talked about a lot in game six and a little bit in game seven, where you're just kind of playing patty cake with Paolo and Franz and not really creating an advantage with any of their pick and roll action or anything. I still don't understand. And obviously that was the game plan, was to have Paolo bring the ball up. I still don't understand that. It felt like a waste of energy and would have liked to have seen him get more touches where he's just starting kind of, free throw line extended or starting on the block. That didn't happen a lot, and just him working his ass off to, you know, either make or miss a shot. And it's fun to watch when it's working, but it's not sustainable when no one else is helping out at all. And then what, fourth quarter, you mentioned they cut, I don't know if we made it to six, but, you know, seven or eight a few times. And yeah, the Wendell and Paolo miscommunication where the ball gets thrown into the front row, I thought was effectively the end of the game. But I mean, if they had home court advantage, do you think they would have won? Because I feel like the 18-point lead would have maybe not got knocked down to as far as it did in the first half. I don't know. But on the whole, obviously, just a tremendous season. And I thought the Game 7 effort was there. Like, I don't have any issues with Game 7. You want a different outcome, but I feel like they, you know, they gave it everything they had. They did not make any shots outside of Paolo.
Yeah, look, the effort was there. Look, if this Game 7 was here in Orlando, this would have turned into Game 7, 95 Eastern Conference Finals against the Pacers. We're up like 30 and we're like dancing and like we're lifting Mosley up in the sky, whatever, you know, at that point. Like, if we're up 18 in the second quarter, that shit's going up to 30 by some point in the third quarter. I don't, you know, as great as Mitchell's been, like, that would have been a backbreaker for him for sure if it was in our building like that, you know, basically like how Game 3 and 4 turned out. So, gosh, man, I said it after we won Game 6, and I said whoever made more threes was going to win the game, and that actually did not happen because the Magic shot 10 of 31 on threes, 32%. Cleveland shot 8 of 24 on threes. So we made two more threes. We shot about the same percent. You know, we shot 32, they shot 33. Points in the paint just killed us, man. The Cavs, 50. We had 28. And, I mean, the second half scoring in the paint was just very ugly from a Magic perspective. Like, we missed a ton of shots in the paint because just fatigue. I mean, the paint defense was about the same. Just the refs, again, was not too happy with the officiating, but against a Game 7, you know, you always lean towards the home team in that regard, I guess. But, like, Cleveland shot 25 of 44 from the paint, and we shot 14 of 43 from the paint. So we had 11 fewer made shots in the paint on almost the same amount of attempts. Like, that's what balanced it all out. Because, again, free throw line, funny enough, the Cavs ended up shooting more free throws than us because – it didn't feel like it for a bit there because Paolo did shoot 15 of 18 himself from the free throw line, but we were 26 of 30 from the charity stripe. Cleveland was 30 of 26 because Mitchell got 15 of 17 at the free throw line. Fucking Caris LeVert was 5 of 7 on his own from the charity stripe. So, you know, Mitchell has been very clever with how he's complained about the officiating, and he, you know, they got a Game 7 home whistle in that regard with the free throws. Because honestly, the Magic should have had more free throws in Cleveland the way we were getting hacked and getting in the paint. But again, we missed shots, man. Rebounding, pretty even. Like, the Magic had 18 offensive rebounds in comparison to Cleveland's 10. You know, points off turnovers was a big thing, even though turnovers were about the same. Like, we had 17, they had 16. You know, they scored 17 points off our turnovers. We scored only 10 off theirs. You know, block shots, they had 8. We had 4. You know, Evan Mobley on his own had 5 block shots. And just looking at the, you know, at the box score, you know, Franz, he almost played 35 minutes. He was 1 of 15 from the field. It ends up being a historic 1 of 15. It's the worst field goal percentage in a Game 7 in NBA history when you look at guys who take a minimum of 15 field goal attempts. Franz, he takes the crown or the baton from Bob Cousy, who went 2 for 20 in Game 7 of the 1957 NBA Finals, which the Celtics still won anyway because they had Bill Russell kicking ass. But I mean, it was tough. Like, Suggs, he was crying at the final whistle. Just a lot of effort and emotion put into the series by everybody. Crying is caring. You know, if anyone's got anything to say about that, they can go fuck themselves. The Magic, or, you know, Suggs, he almost played 40 minutes in the game, hobbled around for most of them. Not a good shooting night for, you know, shooting game for him either. 2 of 13 from the field, 2 of 10 on threes. He had 9 rebounds and 4 assists. Going back to Franz, he had the dreaded 6-6-6 stat line where he had 6 points, 6 boards, 6 assists. But Suggs, he had 10 points, but again, 4 or 5 from the charity stripe. He only made 2 shots, which was the 2 of 10 from 3. So not great. Again, effort was there for everybody. Franz, he didn't have any turnovers. Paolo and Suggs, they each had 5 turnovers. Just not great. Like Mo Wagner had 2 turnovers himself. That's not what you want to see from Mo. Again, you look at the bench, we got 8 points from Markel, which 4 of 6 from the field for Markel in 13 minutes. Not an awful, awful showing for Markel. Jonathan Isaac. Can we talk about Isaac? He was really quiet in this game. He was 1 of 2 from the field, 2 points, 2 rebounds in 18 minutes. It was a very quiet Jonathan Isaac game.
I wanted to ask. I was thinking about that as you were talking about some of the stats, and I want you to riff on Jonathan Isaac, because here's my thought. The counting stats, I guess you could say, not bad for him in terms of like 3-point percentage and stuff like that.
Yeah, in the series,
But first 2 games, Isaac starting, Magic absolutely destroyed on the boards. Cleveland makes the lineup change. Rebounding improves for the Magic. But I didn't think Isaac really did. I don't know that he had the defensive impact that we thought he would.
Not starting.
Game 82 was crazy, right? Like,
yeah,
game 82 probably set the bar way too high. But if you knew you were going to get 21 minutes a game of Jonathan Isaac in the playoffs, I thought he would have had a bigger impact. I know he made a handful of corner threes, etc. But to me, I don't think that he lived up to the billing in this series in terms of what we expected to get and frankly what we needed defensively.
Well, I think that's a testament to how good Jared Allen is, because we didn't start Isaac when it was just Mobley. I would have been curious maybe to see more Isaac versus Mobley, because we didn't really get to see that. Because in this game, I feel like we had Isaac on the perimeter a lot, right? We had him against like Garland, LeVert, like stuff like that. He wasn't going up against Mobley much. And I do wonder, what does the game kind of look like in that regard? Like, could Isaac have helped draw Mobley away from the paint more? I don't know. Mobley didn't have that great of a scoring game either. I mean, Evan Mobley was 5 of 8 from the field. He had 16 rebounds, 11 points, 6 turnovers, which almost negates his 5 block shots. But I mean, like, Mobley wasn't that crazy. And I do think Isaac was just way more effective coming off the bench than starting. And again, I think that's a testament to Jared Allen. Like, hey, if the Cavs don't want Jared Allen and they want to trade him, I'll take Jared Allen as a starting center. I got no problems with that. Jared Allen as starting center next to Paolo and Franz could be fucking awesome. But it was just weird. I don't know if that's Mosley's fault for this game 7 at least or what, but even just Isaac was not, he was getting beat too at the rim a lot, even more than for much of the series. So I don't know if he was tired, if he was hurt.
He was on Mitchell or Garland, right? I mean,
yeah.
He was getting beat by some of the other supporting cast laterally that you just... If he's not staying in front on the perimeter and he's not guarding someone he can help off of to help people who are getting beat, I think that's where you see a lot of the paint production for the Cavs in the second half of the series that were just huge, huge numbers of points in the paint.
Yeah, it was just not a good Isaac game 7 for sure. Mo Wagner, already said he had the two turnovers. He was 1 of 2 from the field. He was 1 of 1 from 3-point range, so he had 3 points. Joe Ingles, he only played 5 minutes. He was 0 of 1 from the field. He missed that kind of, I don't want to say even like a rush 3. He had very like 0 follow through, and so he had no points in the game. Not a great postseason for Joe. Cole Anthony, 13 minutes played, 3 of 5 from the field, didn't attempt a 3. He had 8 points, picked up 5 personal fouls. Cole was okay in this game. He was okay. And then, look at the rest of the starters. Wendell Carter Jr., 5 of 10 from the field, 7 boards, 3 steals. Did have the 2 turnovers, 13 points. So it was statistically, it was an okay game for Wendell. Defensively, like he played well in this game and in large parts of the series. Like defensively, he, especially like laterally, again, he's not a shot blocking rim protector type person, but laterally getting out on the perimeter, like Wendell had a good series in that regard. I still don't think he's starting center caliber, but he wasn't necessarily the issue, I don't think, in at least game seven and some of these other games. I already mentioned Suggs. Gary Harris, 2 of 4 from the field, 27 minutes played, 2 of 3 on threes for Gary. So he honestly, maybe we should just had Gary shoot the ball more, but you know, he fouled out in this game. He had 6 points. Yeah, I mean, that's all I got to say for Gary. His defense, it helped. He kept Darius Garland in check, really, because and helped defend Mitchell, because Garland had 3 of 13 shooting. Did Darius 12 points? Like, literally all he did was hit that 1 3, and he was 1 of 4 on threes, and it kind of turned into a moment there. But Garland didn't kill us in this series. Person who did kill us in this series, obviously, was Donovan Mitchell, who 39 points, 11 of 27 shooting, only 2 of 8 on threes, though. So again, his shot wasn't dropping, but he was just getting to the rim or getting to the free throw line. He also had 9 rebounds and 5 assists, just big time player, Donovan Mitchell. And sorry, I mixed my 30s up. Mitchell ended up with 39 points. Paolo had the 38, but we'll talk about him in a second. So looking at the rest of the Cavs, I mean, Max Strus, 5 of 9, 3 of 6 on threes, 13 points. He had some big buckets in this one. Okoro, 3 of 6, 8 points. He had the best plus minus, plus 24 did Okoro. Mobley already mentioned. Mitchell, he had the 39 already mentioned. Looking at the bench, Marcus Morris played 7 minutes. He had no points. Caris LeVert hurt us. He was 5 of 9 from the field. 5 of 7 from the free throw line. He had 15 points. This was LeVert's best game of the series. Sam Merrill, 11 minutes, 2 of 2 from three, hit 2 free throws, 8 points. Tristan Thompson, 6 minutes, no points, you know, 4 rebounds. George Niang got a quick 3 minutes, 0 of 2 from the field, and Bickerstaff sat him the rest of the way. He finished with no points. And then I'll finish quickly back up with our guy, Paolo. Paolo, he had 38 points. 16 rebounds, 2 assists. Probably would have been more if guys could hit jumpers. You know, he had the 5 turnovers, which is, you know, that's to be expected considering him getting double, triple teamed a lot. He did have 3 steals, though, and a block shot. And so he brought it. He was 15 to 16 from the free throw line, 10 to 18 from the field. You know, that second half, it was just tough to get clean looks. 3 of 6 from 3-point range now, though. And, yeah, I mean, Paolo just had an insane game. I mean, it's tough to, I mean, it's crazy to just deal with this all the time. You know, Paolo, again, his 38 points, they're the most in a game 7 by a player 21 years of age or younger. And Paolo is also the second youngest player in NBA history to drop 30 points and 15 rebounds in a playoff game. Only Magic Johnson was younger when he did it. And players under 22 years old to average 25 plus points per game and 8 plus rebounds per game over a 7-game playoff series. It's Paolo and it's 2006 LeBron James. So that's all pretty damn good company to be in. I don't know what from the stats does, you know, what stands out from the stats that I went through, Penny, if anything.
I think the stats really just kind of reflect how, I think accurately reflect kind of how you felt watching the game. It was a slog for both teams, right? I mean, yeah. It kind of feels like in game 7, you could make a case that the game really hinged on Sam Merrill making the 2 threes in the first half that you referenced earlier. Like, the stars showed up in Paolo and in Donovan Mitchell, and there was just enough kind of Cavalier periphery there to get them over the hump. I don't know. I'm just glad that George Niang is not a member of the team and will never be a member of the team.
Fair enough. Yeah. You know, I already mentioned how Mosley kind of leaned into the refs in the post game presser, as he should have. But look, man, game 7 home whistle. That's the privilege of having home court advantage, is you get that game 7 home whistle sometimes. And it's something for us to strive for next season. The 18-point Cavs comeback is apparently the biggest ever in the playoffs when it comes to the play-by-play tracking error. So I think I heard that it's it. I've seen and read that it's that started around 1996, 1997. There's some people saying the 18-point Cavs comeback is the biggest Game 7 comeback in playoff history, but I don't think that's true. It's they're just looking over the past 28 years, really, in that regard. But it still stings. The point differential of the series was Magic plus 31. So we lose the series 4-3, but we had a plus 31 point differential. It's the fourth worst point differential of a playoff series winner in NBA history. That one is factual there. And yeah, I mean, look, Donovan Mitchell won the series. He had 89 points in game 6 and 7, I believe. And it's the second most ever for a game 6 and 7 of a single series, behind only 2001 Allen Iverson, who had 90 points in a series. And yeah, I mean, it's Donovan Mitchell was the difference in the series. He's had the experience. He's shown up in big games before. And look, man, if he doesn't want to be in Cleveland anymore, if he wants to join the Magic, I'll more than happily take him here, because I like Donovan Mitchell. I've been a fan of his for a while. I don't think he'd want to come to this team. I think he'd rather go to like New York. But I mean, it came down to Mitchell in the end, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, just say the. I don't feel like the Magic. Obviously, you don't want to lose that way, right?
Yeah.
Like, it was a gutting loss to lose that way, but
yeah.
I don't think overall the series stings in any way. Everyone seems to be saying the right things immediately after the game, and you know, exit interviews to come, taking it the right way. I also don't think that the 18-point comeback will stand for a long time in terms of the biggest Game 7. You know, deficit overcome. So just based on the way the league is going, and you've seen it across multiple series here in the first round, look at the Nuggets and Lakers, you know, like I don't think we'll have that shame either for a long period of time at all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I threw this out on Twitter and it seemed to get a lot of popularity, but I just kind of want to remind folks from a historical franchise perspective, like you look at Shaquille O'Neal, Shaq didn't win his first playoff series until his third NBA season. Now, we made it to the 1995 NBA Finals, but still, you know, a big reason for that was we signed Horace Grant that offseason, and it changed everything, you know, throwing him with Penny, Nick, and Dennis Scott. You know, that was a big deal. Look at Dwight Howard. Dwight didn't win his first playoff series until his fourth NBA season. That was 2008 Toronto Raptors. We were there for that. We were there for the three home games of that. You know, the Rashard Lewis acquisition that offseason was massive. Also having Stan Van Gundy as a head coach was massive at that point. So for young guys, for young players, like you need some help. You do. And that help's going to come. But Paolo's done all this in his second season, where we've won 47 games and we were the fifth seed. We were so close to being like a top three seed almost, you know. But it's just massive strides. Like we've improved by 12 games or more the past two seasons. I doubt we'll improve by 12 games next season, but because then you're looking at 59, 60 wins at that point, which would be insane. But you know, we've got a big offseason ahead of us now. And look, we haven't looked at the exit interviews that have happened today. We'll look at them and, you know, just breathe a little bit here. Just kind of take some time off. We'll review all this. You know, we'll review how the players did this season, and kind of talk about roster decisions and what we want to see done in the draft and free agency in later episodes here in the coming month or so, Penny. But for now, just fan base, everybody, just breathe, relax, take some time off, just reflect on what's been an awesome, great 35th Magic season. You know, I mean, final thoughts, Penny, looking at, I guess, the series or just this whole run as a whole from the outside perspective, because I said it in the intro where basically for me personally, this is like a top five Magic season in my lifetime. It's up there with, you know, 09, 95, Heart and Hustle team, 08, it's up there for me. You know, I don't know what your thoughts are, Penny.
Yeah, certainly. Top five or six, at least in terms of enjoyment, and it's been so long since we've had anything really to cheer for beyond mediocrity. I mean, a lot of can.
Oop, you cut out
The
on me, Penny.
average, right?
Oop,
I mean, we're
sorry. You
40, 42.
cut out real quick. Can you go again?
I was going to say that even the best Tracy McGrady teams were average teams. And this was a good team, which we really haven't had a lot of good teams except maybe on the ascent of the Dwight years. So certainly one of the most enjoyable ones. You pegged it in another episode where there were no expectations. It was just a pleasant year all the way around. And more to come.
Yeah, I mean, real quick, I do want to go kind of looking at the stats a little bit from a 7-game perspective. Like Donovan Mitchell, he averaged 29 points per game, 5 boards, 4 assists for the series, 46% shooting, only twice 25% from three. Then he did get Jared Allen, who only played 4 games, but I mean, he averaged 17 points per game, 14 rebounds. You look at Evan Mobley, only 48% from the field. 9 points, 9 rebounds per game, 12 points per game. Mobley was, I'd say, just okay. I mean, he did better as the sole big man for them, but Mobley didn't really kill us. Yeah, he got some block shots here and there, but I don't think Mobley killed us. And then Darius Garland shot 45% from the field, 40% from three, 15 points per game, 4 boards per game, 5 assists. I mean, he shot it okay, did Garland. He just, I guess, just didn't get enough volume in that regard. And from a Magic perspective, Paolo averaged 27, 8.6 rebounds, 4 assists on 46% shooting from the field, 40% from 3-point range, which is big. And I mean, even his free throw shooting was a little bit better. It was almost 76%. You look at Franz. Despite that game seven and him struggling on the road in Cleveland, he still averaged 19 points per game, 7 boards, 4.4 assists, 41% shooting from the field. You want that to be higher. Obviously, the 26.5% from three, not great. And then Suggs was the only other Magic player at 14.7 points per game in double figures, scoring for us, 5 boards, 3 assists. He only shot 29% from three. 40% from the field. So offensively, it was just a slog with percentages from most of the rest of the guys. Like Wendell shot 40% from the field, 28% from three, just 7.5 points. Markel shoots 59% for the series. He didn't make a three, but 6.4 points, not terrible considering what others contributed. Isaac percentages look okay. 41% from the field is not great, but 37% from three is decent. 6 points, five boards. Mo Wagner, 44.4% shooting from the field, only 22.2 from three. Same average as Isaac, 6.3 points, 4.4 boards. Cole Anthony, brutal shooting series for Cole overall, 31.7% from the field, 15.4% from three, 5 points, 5.1 points per game he averaged in the series. Gary, 29% shooting from the field, 32% from three, only 4.2 points per game. Gary was all about the defense, and that's mostly what he provided. Joe Ingles, 33.3% from the field, 28.6% from three, 1.6 points per game. He averaged more rebounds and more assists than he did points in the series, Penny. Anthony Black, yeah, I mean the others, it's just small stuff, so I won't even touch the other ones. But I mean, we'll go into it deeper into the offseason. But I mean, obviously shooting, maybe a better starting center. But the big thing is deciding what you're gonna do with that second guard spot, Whether you decide you want to re-sign Gary Harris or not. Like Gary can't be a starter going into next season. You need to decide if you want an actual lead point guard who doesn't need to take shots, but takes a lot of pressure off of guys like Paolo and Franz and can just put them in better positions to score. That's what you need. Whether that's a Tyus Jones or Chris Paul, DeJounte Murray, even like stuff like that. Or are you looking for more kind of like a scoring guard such as Paul George, Anfernee Simons, I mean, Malik Monk, I wouldn't start Malik Monk, and I don't want to pay money for Malik Monk. But like Klay Thompson is somebody who he plays good defense still. He doesn't need the ball a bunch, but he'll spread the floor and he'll kill folks with threes, considering Paolo gets double and triple teamed all the time. So stuff like that. Am I missing a need, Penny? Like those are the three big needs, really, right?
No, you have the needs exactly right. I was going to say on the stats, the shooting splits are not acceptable, and they look garish until you compare them line by line to the Cleveland Cavalier numbers, which outside of, you know, Donovan Mitchell are pretty much just as bad.
But yes,
I did want to get your very quickly on one final thing on the series. What's your letter grade for Jamal Mosley and his performance as a first time coach in the playoffs? I thought acceptable grade, with the note about the, you know, all bench lineups that I did not agree with.
I mean, I'll give him somewhere like a B minus, maybe somewhere around there. Like there's a lot that could have been done, especially from like a game management perspective that weren't done, but. I mean, overall, again, it's been a great season. It's his first playoffs. So now you compare this with going forward. How does he improve? I mean, you're looking at the teams as a whole. The Magic shot 31% from three. Cavs shot 29% from three. The Magic averaged 100 points per game. Cavs averaged 96 points per game. You know, Cavs as a whole shot 44% from the field. We shot 42% from the field. So a lot of it's close or fairly close, like nothing completely crazy out of the blue. It's just, honestly, Donovan Mitchell was the difference in the series. Like that's really what it came down to. Honest to God. Like if you look back, we could have won game one if we weren't jittery out of the gate, and we definitely could have won game five. It's just, if one or two things goes different, we win game five and we win the series 4-2 in Orlando. But it just didn't work out like that because the Cavs as a whole have just way more playoff experience than we do. Donovan Mitchell is just a clutch time performer. He did what he got paid to do, and that was just find a way to win and find a way to score a bunch of points. Even if your three-point shot, your jump shot's not going in, he found a way. And just tip of the cap to him. Maybe J.B. Bickerstaff's job just got saved. Depends on how they do against the Celtics. It wouldn't shock me if the Cavs win two games or three games against the Celtics and push them, because Boston doesn't have Porzingis. And sometimes when you go through hell in a series, it helps you on the next series. Like there's some 2009 Magic vibe potential there, where like we went through hell against the Sixers that first round, and then that prepped us for the Celtics and then the Cavs to get to the finals. Not saying Cleveland's going to make a run, but if they perform well and they really caused big time damage against the Celtics, the Magic deserve a lot of credit for that. And I will yield the floor to you because I am done.
That's exactly right. We got two sides of that coin in 2009, where we had a test each round that seemed to propel us forward. And then in 2010, we cakewalked to the Eastern Conference Finals and then laid an egg. So
yeah.
If anything, the Magic did the Cavs a favor by putting them through the paces. And on the whole, again, you're exactly right. It's not a great show when there's so much congruity between the two of us, but Donovan Mitchell's elite. Those, you know, just the points in the paint and the contested shots and the deep threes and everything else, like just a superstar player, and did what superstars do to a point that only Allen Iverson has done, you know, point wise and usage wise previously. So tip of the cap indeed, and looking forward to the Magic have a path in front of them. They have several pathways to choose. It'll be really fun to see which path they select. And I feel like next year's going to be, I mean, you know, we're all very bullish on the future, and seems like this is just the first stepping stone for really great things ahead.
Final thought. The Franz Wagner hate just needs to stop. Okay. He didn't have a great game. He still had an overall pretty decent series. He's going to be fine. Whether maybe some type of injury was causing him issues for a lot of the portions of the season that hurt his three-point shooting, his jump shooting in general, or if there's just something else there, be it a mental thing or just a shot form thing. But I don't know, Penny. I still think he can be the second best player on a title team. I really can. There's a lot of Magic fans that don't think so. There's some that say, you know, third best player on a title winning team. There's some that think he's worse than that. Those people can jump off a cliff. Like Franz has proven that he can be a top two player on a title winning team, I feel like. I don't know if you've wavered off that or not.
Yeah. Game, you know, performance for Franz, I don't understand why game seven gets so much more weight than game four. Obviously, I get that, you know, game seven is the be all end all, but if he's capable of doing that in a game four, I don't think the polar ends of the, you know, the extreme ends are what you're judging him on. I think you're judging him over the course of the series. And, you know, he performed very well, given the limitations of the roster for both him and Paolo in terms of spacing on the offensive end, I thought.
Yeah, look, yeah, I mean, Franz had an amazing game four. He had a really solid game six, maybe not necessarily shooting percentage-wise, but, you know, he was one of the three guys to score over 20 points in that game six and clinch that game. And then game three, it's the Paolo Banchero game three, but Franz Wagner got us off to that awesome start, and that just led through into that momentum of Paolo taking over. So he's going to be fine. People asking players to not partake in the Olympics, don't do that. Okay, that's how you get better, is playing in FIBA competitions in the Olympics. They're still going to get their work in. Brett Brielmeier is probably going to be on the German national team staff again. So guess what? He's going to get all his Magic work in. Art female trainer is going to probably be there again as well. So he's going to get his physical work in as well. So there's no reason for him to sit out unless he has like a surgery or something. That's literally the only reason. But if he's healthy, he needs to play in the Olympics. And I know Team USA is going to be stacked. I'm still hoping two or three guys kind of end up sitting out, but, and that Paolo Banchero gets a spot. But yeah, if you get an invite to the Olympics, go play in the Olympics. And that's it. That's going to do it for this episode. If you're still listening, we thank you very much for your time. It's been a great 35th Magic season. We are the longest running Magic podcast show in existence, so any added support is much appreciated. Subscribing, rating the show highly, positive comments, they all help this podcast ranking immensely. Tweet us any of your questions and feedback. Penny, what's your Twitter handle?
At Spencer Strode.
No C's, just S's, and I'm at Papa Giorgio MBO. And with that, take care. Let's go, Magic.